Hello and welcome to this special series of PaleoCast, which is going to be looking at the new Netflix documentary, Life on Our Planet. My name's Dave Marshall, and I am joined here by Dr. Tom Fletcher. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
I am very good. I am excited. I'm excited for this podcast series. I'm excited for the Netflix series. I'm excited to see what people think about it. It is a good time.
It's a bit scary, isn't it? Because we both worked on this, and it's been about 6 years in the works overall. And me and you have been involved with it for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that reaction you talk about is it's terrifying, but at the same time, I'm really excited to get it out there finally.
Yeah. I can't wait to send it to my mum and to be
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah, absolutely.
Mum, watch this.
Yeah, they will be the first to see it because I will send it to them. I think it's being released on at midnight on the 25th. So, but that's, Pacific time, maybe. I'm not sure. But anyway, 25th, I'll be sending her a link, whether she's asleep or not.
Yeah, I'm going to send my mum a link and a can of energy drink.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Watch this. Let me know.
Get the kettle on. Yeah.
Yeah. So we should tell everyone about who we are. Who are you? Who are you, Tom?
Who am I? my name's Tom Fletcher. I am an employee at Silverback Films as the senior scientific researcher, which essentially means I keep an eye on their scientific accuracy, informing the builds of these assets and the fact-checking, some of the scripts, the stories, giving them an envelope of science to work with. I'm also an honorary fellow at the University of Leicester, where I'm currently doing the odd lecture as well. So I'm a busy bee.
What's your background?
It's a book cabinet. My research background is the hydrodynamics of fossil sharks. Did that for a number of years. And before that, firmly in the biomechanics realm, I did a master's in jaw mechanics at the University of Bristol.
Wow. I can see how that's relevant to this show, for sure.
Yeah, it is actually. I mean, it seems very niche and esoteric, but I think the most important thing is you by going to conferences and mingling with the scientists that do such weird and disparate things, you do build up quite a good contact book, quite a good address book of people who you can contact. So if you want to know if a dinosaur had eyelashes, you're like, oh, I know exactly who to contact about that. So it has been useful in a way.
Do dinosaurs have eyelashes?
Oh, let's not get into it. I don't think so.
I don't care.
Well, I mean, ostriches do, you know, but crocodiles don't. So, you know, we can open that up maybe to the audience. They can debate that.
Yeah, write in.
Do people still send postcards? Answers on postcards?
A self-addressed envelope.
Self-addressed.
And we will send you our answer by mail.
Yeah, that'll work.
Excellent. Right. So my name's Dave Marshall. I am an honorary something at the University of Bristol. I can't remember what my title is, but I'm associated with them academically. So my background is on arthropods, mostly in the Paleozoic, which is really the first big chunk of the fossil record where we get really, you know, like the first complex multicellular big animals as we know them animals. So I am firmly rooted academically deep down where the things all look weird and they're all crunchy and tentacly and there.
Crunchy is a good word. I would describe most things that live in the Paleozoic as crunchy. I like your self-description there.
And I also look at foraminifera, of all things, for a job.
Oh.
And then also loads of other things besides that. So, yeah.
You're a natural philosopher, Dave. That's what I've always admired about you, is you don't put your eggs in one basket. You're constantly curious and asking questions. Awkward questions about everything and anything. It's good.
And I also do a podcast. And you also do a podcast. It's called PaleoCast, and you're listening to it right now. This is the world's greatest, hopefully, podcast on paleontology. It's I think, the longest running one now. It's been going like 11 years.
Wow.
So where have you been if you've not yet listened?
Well done, Dave. That's such a massive achievement.
Thank you very much.
It really is.
And we're still going strong. And look at what we're doing now. We're doing this absolutely huge, enormous mega series on life on our planet. So excited to be doing this. So, Tom, tell us, because you know better than I, what loop is all about.
Okay, so me and you call it Loop, but it's called Life on Our Planet. That's the long version. And it is an 8-part series that's premiering on Netflix on the 25th of October. Likelihood you're listening to this after that point, but we're still a day away or so. And it's a huge, huge series. It's a huge story. It's a huge series. It's the last 4 billion years of Earth history and every living thing that's lived on the surface since then. So obviously, we are picking and choosing the interesting stories to tell along the way. Those interesting stories are key evolutionary processes and jumps through the different groups. So everything from the first life form to invertebrates, fishes, amphibians, reptiles, mammals, birds, and of course, dinosaurs.
Yep. And we are, what are we doing in this podcast series? We're going to be looking at Loop in a different way and trying to get under the hood a bit. So we're going to be talking to the people that made the show, the showrunners, the producers, the researchers, everyone that can show us how it was built up. We're also going to talk to the academics and see their side of things. What was actually going on at the time? When we see something on screen, where did that information come from? What else is known about these animals and how they behaved and what was going on geologically, what was happening with the plants, what kinds of information goes into the way that things move, into the way that we show them moving around the continents, how they react to world-changing events. There is absolutely so much science, and we try and explore that a bit more.
Yeah, this is going to be a deep dive. The stuff that, we can only tell so much in a documentary, but the research and the amount of information that just got consumed as part of that process behind the scenes is enormous. And talking to those people, you're going to find out that there's an awful lot of work that went into this. So it's a really nice opportunity here on Paleocast to tell you all of that, all those tidbits of information and exactly what went into it.
We're going to be releasing batches of interviews, each corresponding to a single episode of Life on Our Planet. We'll be speaking to the production crew about how the episode was created, and we unpack some of the events depicted on screen with one of the episode's many scientific consultants. And for even more information than can fit into an 8-part Netflix series and a multi-part podcast series, there's always the book of the series written by our own Dr. Tom Fletcher.
Oh, thank you. I got a plug. Thank you. Much appreciated.
So let's start with episode one. So I want from you, Tom, and I've got a timer here, I want a 10-second introduction to the series. Go.
Yikes. Okay. So the first episode is a summation of the series. You're going to see loads of really stunning photography, some of the animals that you'll see through the series. And the whole episode is about the rules of life, evolution, and how the planet works and affects life on our planet.
Okay, it was 14 seconds, but then you took it to 16 seconds with a little extra.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to work on that. We're going to have to get that down.
I didn't do well there. I wasn't expecting that, David, and that was naughty of you. It was like you'd thrust a microphone into my face and barked questions. So if the rest of the episode could be a bit more calm, that would be nice.
Well, that's just my interviewing style. I'm afraid we've got quite a lot of interviews like that.
Fine. All right.
With our academic guests.
Okay.
Tell us what happened. 10 seconds.
Well, I'll try and be as accurate as possible while also being harassed.
What did you contribute?
To the series, I was the scientific... Why are you laughing? Why are you laughing? It's quite an aggressive question, David, but I will answer it for you. So, as you know, I'm a scientific advisor for the series, and really, I was a checkpoint for the facts, the figures, correcting some of the stories just to be more accurate. Really, giving an envelope to the producers and everyone, really, of what was possible, what there was scientific basis for, what the literature was suggesting, and also just helping to wade through a lot of the literature for more controversial topics as well. It's one thing to look at the latest paper. It's another thing to look at the body of literature and figure out what the consensus view is. So that was my role for the series, really. Dave, in 10 seconds, can you give a summation of what you contributed to the series? 3, 2, 1, go.
I came in very early in the development and helped them decide what kinds of things that they wanted to show. I then came back later on to help with the VFX and draw up fact files, particularly for the animals in the first quarter of the series.
Oh, you won't believe this, Dave, but you were bang on 14 seconds there. Yeah. It's hard, isn't it?
Maybe we should just do a 14-second introduction.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
that seems about the right length, yeah. I feel.
It's less stressful.
So I was about at the start. I didn't get to see, you know, like all the polished stuff. I was just there for helping iron out the nitty gritty details of some of the crunchy. What did it, crunchy animals? Did I say they were?
Yeah.
Crunchy,
I really like
squidgy.
Yeah, I really like your description of Paleozoic fauna as crunchy and squishy. It's definitely, yeah, no, I get that. And we were sort of, we were working together for a little while, weren't we? There was an overlap between us. I think I arrived in 2019 and yeah, you'd been working on it for about 6 months.
And I left straight away. When Tom's there, I was out.
It was, I think you got to see a couple of the assets getting towards completion. So Lystrosaurus would have been one of the first ones through the pipeline, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And I think honestly, like, I mean, I don't know if you've been asking people this question, but it is one of my favorite species in the whole series because it sort of epitomizes what we were trying to do, really, which is tell the story of life versus, you know, extinction. And the, yeah, it's such an unassuming little animal that, you know, it doesn't seem exciting like a T-Rex or something like that, but it's so important. The story of life.
I absolutely loved with Lystrosaurus the fact, and one of my fondest memories of my time in Silverback was trying to figure out how it walked. And I printed off a load of little circles, laid them out on the ground as per a trace fossil of trackways of Lystrosaurus. And then was like, how did it actually walk? And did the walk myself through the office.
That's
trying to
incredible.
Figure out how it stepped.
That's incredible commitment, David. I'm very impressed. Yeah.
So when you see Lystrosaurus walking, think of me just crawling through the office on all fours.
And we used truckways quite a lot, didn't we? I think with the biomechanics and getting things to walk right. I mean that the truckways are our point of call for the data. So you know you can get the stride length, you can get some of the movement. Of course, with Lystrosaurus, you're sort of in a halfway house between a mammal and a reptile, so that's a really tricky one to start with, so I'm very impressed.
So what would you say your favorite scene from episode one is?
I think episode one has got so much stuff in because it's kind of a summary of what you're going to see in the series, so there's loads of really fantastic animals in there. But as for a dedicated sequence, I think it's got to be the butterflies versus passion flowers. It's a natural history sequence. So I'm not choosing an extinct creature here, which might surprise you, but it really epitomizes evolution. It's an arms race that happens between heliconid butterflies and the passion flower, Passiflora, various species of those. And the butterfly is desperate to lay its eggs somewhere, and its larvae its caterpillars will feed on the passion flowers. But obviously the passion flower doesn't want that. So there's an arms race that goes on between the two, and throughout the sequence, it just escalates and escalates. There's all sorts of tactics that these two organisms use to put each other off. So that's one of my favorites. And really, it highlights the story that we want to tell, which is, what is evolution? What are the rules of life? What does evolution actually mean in a real, tangible way? And finding a story that demonstrates what evolution is really tricky because it happens over millions of years. So to sort of see it in action in one sequence, I think was really special. It's a really cute little sequence. And I think that's by far my favorite. The photography in that is wonderful.
So what are the rules of life?
I think, so we have a few in the first episode that are really important. And the sort of headline is that with sexual reproduction, you've got a kind of mishmash of genes. And animals, they'll produce more offspring than they need because they are probably going to get predated, a lot of the young. So producing more offspring than you need, that's what butterflies do. They lay loads and loads of eggs. Not all of the caterpillars will survive. A lot of them will get predated. But because of that genetic mashup, you've got lots of variation between the offspring as well. And that's the crucial thing, is that some of those offspring are going to be fitter for the environment. And by that, I mean they're more likely to survive. And that can mean the difference between being slightly greener, being slightly faster. There are these trade-offs that happen all the time with evolution that mean that one juvenile will survive and another won't, to adulthood and spreading their genes on to the future generations. So that sequence really, really demonstrates that nicely. As well as talking about evolution, we also talk about the fact that the Earth itself, possibly, well, definitely the biggest character that we've got in the series, is the governing force of everything. Slight changes that are caused by Earth processes, whether it be temperature or habitat changes, those are the things that govern whether a species is fit for that environment and will survive. So the rules for life really are summarized in that short sequence quite nicely.
I also think there's don't eat yellow snow.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Buy cheap, yep. Pay twice.
Yes, yep. Play batteries, yep.
What else?
A stitch in time saves nine. That's a good one too. Yeah.
I don't know what that one is.
It means that if you've got a bit of cloth that's fraying or a bit of clothing that's fraying and you've got a hole in it, a stitch of cotton to tie it means that you save it going even further and getting even worse, and you needing nine stitches later on. So nipping things in the bud, basically, making sure that you do the work early to save yourself work down the line. That's a good one for you, Dave, particularly.
Right, I see. I didn't think about time ripping.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you should have that written above your computer, I think.
Oh yeah, that'd be nice. Right, I want to know, audiences, what are the audiences' rules for life? Send them in. I want to know how we can best live our lives.
When you asked me that question, what are the rules for life? That's what I automatically thought. Is Dave after therapy right now? What's he after? I kept it to what was in the series, but. Yeah, answers on a postcard of what we can do better with our lives.
Stop podcasting.
Never. What was your favourite scene, Dave?
I don't know. I think I enjoyed just the whole scope of the episode one, the whole run through of what we're going to be seeing, what diversity of life there is now. I enjoyed it all as a feat. If I had to say, it's probably seeing the Reef Thrasucid for the first time.
Oh, yeah. Because
it kind of looks like a T-Rex, but then you realize that it's not. But the textures on it, oh, I just want to rub it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? I mean, the attention to detail with those shots is, I mean, the artist did a fantastic job with the assets and the scale texture and the blood on the teeth and the slight yellowing. I think half of the job of these animators is to make a beautiful, pristine animal and then muck it up, you know, because if you go out into the wild and actually look at animals in real life, they're not going to be pristine. So having those scars and having those abrasions and dust all over them, that kind of stuff, that really makes them feel realistic in their environment. And the filmmakers, they were really keen to get that sense that you are looking at an animal through a long lens. You don't want to be next to that erythrosuchid because it's got big teeth, because it looks like it could run if it wanted to. So it's a really long lens. You get a heat haze in front of it as well. And, you know, there's all sorts of camera trickery that goes into making it feel like a real natural history documentary, which is this sort of attention to detail you'll probably never notice, but it's there. Yeah. And it gives a feeling of you're watching this and the cameraman is afraid to go any closer to this animal.
There are so many times throughout this podcast series where I've been talking to people and I just don't notice something and I'm just like, I need to go back and watch it again.
Great.
Just to see if I notice that thing, to see if I notice this thing, that thing. There's so much in it, so many little details, Easter eggs. There's tons of stuff to go back.
Yeah, it requires a rewatch really to get the most out of it. Because the other thing is that we really do take you on that journey at breakneck speed. It's a really fast-paced, exciting journey through the whole history of the evolution of life. So, yeah, definitely worth a rewatch.
We're going to start this podcast series by talking to showrunner Dan Tapster. We get into the behind-the-scenes details of how the show was commissioned, how you go about making a documentary, and what were some of the challenges of creating a documentary of this scale. So please join me and Dan in episode 1.2, and Tom, I'll catch up with you for the next introduction.
Thank you, Dave.